Hi, guys, and welcome to Cycles News and Views. It is January the 23rd, and I have with me today Ed Dowd. Ed is a longtime subscriber of mine. Ed was a fund manager for, I think you said, a $15 billion equity portfolio back in the day, if you will. Ed is no longer with that company. I think you're taking some time off and managing your own money and just kind of relaxing a little bit. But Ed called me the other day. Like I said, he's a longtime subscriber. And we talked for a couple of hours about things. And, you know, I wish I had a lot of that on tape, if you will. But it was such a good conversation that I asked Ed if he would do an interview with me. And, guys, here he is. Ed, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Tim. Great to be here today. We did have a good conversation, and I'm looking forward to the discussion today. Like you said, I was a portfolio manager of a large-cap growth equity fund for about 10 years. At the height of our asset gathering, we had about $15 billion. I left at the end of 2012 to pursue other interests, and I've been taking some time off with my family, recharging my batteries, managing my own money, and you know, looking forward to the next leg of my career. However, as my message to you suggested, we got some things that are going to happen between now and I you know, the next 18 months should be very interesting, I would think, according to your work and what I'm seeing fundamentally.
Yeah, and Ed, it seems like, you know, I was thinking on the way back here, you know, to do this interview with you. What's kind of spooky, you know, I look at the setup, I look at the statistics, I look at the underlying economic fundamental picture, the underlying technical foundation in which this entire advance out of the 09 low has taken place, and it's really quite frightening. And then when you start connecting some of the dots and some of the fallout, I mean, it's just an absolute recipe for disaster, and that's some of the things that we talked about and I want to talk about. But at the same time, you know, I've said that, you know, it's going to continue until we get the right setup to cap it. And the thing that bothers me right now is I've seen quite a number of bearish articles actually coming out. And it makes me wonder, you know, maybe this thing still has further to go. What do you see? Tell me what you're seeing.
Well, so, you know, look, you know, for most of my career, I was a bottoms-up fundamental stock picker. And, you know, I analyzed individual companies, constructed a portfolio. Having said that, it wasn't that I would stick my head in the sand and ignore overall market technicals or economic long-term trends. And, you know, from a fundamental standpoint, the market went up 30% last year. But most of that advance in the market from a fundamental standpoint was the market multiple expanding. Earning growth was very weak, and top-line growth actually was, I think, flat. So fundamentally, you know, this market is going up on, you know, just exuberance and excitement. And you are right. There are lots of people trying to get bearish, talking about being bearish, but the sentiment indicators would suggest that, you know, the way people are positioned, they're not bearish.
Right.
When I talk to my friends in the money management industry, you know, some of them are getting a little leery, but a lot of them missed last year's bull market in terms of being not bullish enough. And then, you know, additionally, I just spoke with someone today in the hedge fund community that suggested that the hedge fund community is starting to get net, not net short, I don't want to use that term, but they're putting on more shorts than they've had in a while. And, you know, you and I talked about this earlier, you know, the market tends to cause the most amount of pain to the most amount of individuals at any one time. So my gut is telling me this thing has further to go, and we're going to stretch a little further into the final top of this cycle.
And I think I agree. You know, we have, I think, a short to intermediate degree correction underway, and then it wouldn't surprise me to see that happen. Now, you know, that said, and this is not doublespeak, and I'm saying this for people that are not subscribing to the letter, but that may hear this interview. But, you know, things can change, and if we do see things fall in place with the DNA markers, then they fall in place. But as of right now, kind of looking at it on an intermediate-term basis, I agree completely. I agree.
Yeah, Tim, you and I were talking earlier. you see a lot of the DNA markers there, but we're not quite 100% there, correct?
Correct. I mean, we're seeing cracks. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Cracks in the foundation. And Ed, when we stand back, you know, I don't want to talk gloom and doom. That's not really the point. The point is awareness, you know, to try to, because, you know, I post articles on the internet. You try to tell people things, like you were telling me a conversation you had with someone at dinner, and the guy asked you what you thought, and when you really told him what you thought, I mean, he looked at you like you had two heads or something. I mean, he just didn't get it. And I think that, you know, let me back up. When this rally began out of the 09 low, I made the statement. I said, the longer the rally goes, the more dangerous it would become. Now, I didn't think it was going to take the market to new highs, and I didn't think that we were going to see another extended four-year cycle like we have. But the statement stands. You know, we haven't seen the DNA markers all set up, and I think that certainly what we have seen is that this rally has become very, very dangerous because, as you said, I mean, some of the sentiment indicators are at levels not seen since early 1987. So that proves to me that people are buying into this, and that's precisely what I meant by becoming more dangerous. People don't understand just how fragile of a setup that we have here, and that's what I'd like to talk about. I want someone to hear that from I want people to hear that from someone other than myself. Can you talk about some of that bigger picture stuff to help people understand? You know,
sure. So let's think about fundamentally what happened. We had the tech bubble, and we you know, I think you correctly called that top, and then I think you called the turn as well in 2000 and the turn in end of 02, beginning of 03. And, you know, we had a market recovery, but, you know, we handed off from the tech bubble to the credit/housing bubble, okay? And we reinflated the markets in the U.S. and drove up housing prices to unprecedented heights. I used a lot of your work in conjunction with my fundamental analysis to actually get that call right in 2008. We got defensive in our portfolios, and we raised the maximum amount of cash we were allowed, and we got ahead of the curve, and then we saw the turn coming in 09 as well. So, you know, I'm a fundamental guy, but I use some of your work to help me inform myself about, you know, potential turning points, And that's what, you know, I think a lot of your work is good at is, you know, you take the emotion out of what's going on and you just look at, you know, cycles and turning points and to give you an idea when they may be coming. And so the setup coming out of 09 was the Fed and the powers that be across the globe had a coordinated inflation of the money supply to, you know, recover and help the economy. And since then, let's think about what this recovery has been. It, you know, 70% of GDP consumption of our GDP is consumption. You know, we have unprecedented unemployment levels. 95 million people have left the workforce. We have, I guess, saw this statistic the other day. 20% of all families in the U.S. are on food stamps. We have the highest level of food stamp in use in the United States ever. And I think the difference between what happened in the 30s and today is we don't have food lines because we do have food stamps. And we do have the government. We have the safety net, which we didn't have back then. The government is providing transfer payments to a lot of people who are unemployed. So the corporate profits and the recovery in the stock market has been built upon consumption resuming. A lot of that consumption was subsidized through government transfer payments. You have companies cutting costs, and then you have companies buying back their own stock with cheap Federal Reserve dollars, you know, with interest rates at zero, you know, it makes sense for companies to borrow and buy back their stock. And that, you know, decreases the shares outstanding and increases EPS. And so you have, you know, this all conspires to give the illusion of some sort of recovery out there. Now, if you look at revenue growth has been non-existent. You know, there has been some revenue growth, but for the most part, revenue growth is hard to come by, and we're not seeing it. And so you have a market and this ties into your work, you have a market where you have peak margins, operating margins on all, most of the companies out there. You have buybacks, and you have transfer payments from the government supporting this whole thing. And we put a right now the market is putting a multiple on that of about 17 times forward earnings, I believe, or trailing earnings. I can't remember which one it is, but it's not cheap. And I would tell you that if you're just going to stand back and say, what kind of multiple should you put on those earnings, I would say it should be a lot lower. So that's kind of where we are fundamentally.
Okay. And let me ask you an academic question, if you will. When I look at things like the velocity of money, like you mentioned, the labor force, and there was a chart I've recently posted in one of the letters, and every indication, even the stock market itself, I mean, looking at the top in 2000, by every historical measure, that was the, let's call it the natural top for the stock market. And I guess my thesis is, when I look at all the underlying data that I look at, it's hard not to argue that 2000 was the peak in the economy, at least. And that I think it's pretty obvious that the actions by the money masters since that time has been to try to reinflate, if you will, that dying economy. And so my question, the academic question is, you know, and I've had a couple people ask me this lately. I said, okay, well, did the bull market top in 2000? Did it top in 2007? Or did it never end, and is it topping now? Let me say up front, the significance of that question is, to me, is that when you go back in time and you look at the bull and bear market relationships, according to the old work by the great Dow theorist, what I found was that the secular bear markets run about a third the duration of the preceding bull market. Well, if it topped in 2000, we're past that point. 2009 was the magic number, but when you look at some of the other stuff from Dow theory, such as values mainly, obviously there was no value low. That was not a bear market bottom low. So then that brings the question, well, did it stretch into 2007? If it did, then this is a bear market rally. But then we're at all-time highs here. So could it be that it never ended, in which case we have a 40-year bull market run on our hands, and this thing, the ugly hasn't even begun yet, if that's the case. Be careful what you argue, because you may get it, and what I'm saying is, if that's the case, if people want to argue that, oh, this is still a bull market, or it is a bull market, careful what you want, because if that's the case, then, hey, we're looking at a 13-year bear market potentially ahead of us, if that's true. What's your take on that?
Well, so I personally believe, and I've read lots of different things, I believe that the secular bull market ended in 2000, and that we have been in a secular bear market ever since. That if they had just let things naturally take their course after 2000, we would already be coming out of this secular bear market, and we'd be moving on. But they let the excesses build, a couple times. And so, so I was just talking with someone about this today. So we had a tech bubble in 2000. Then they formed a housing bubble. And I'm talking to a lot of people who are, thinkers and investors and business owners, and a lot of people are saying, what's the next bubble? Is the next bubble the sovereign debt bubble? And if you think about what, the governments had to do after the financial crisis, they had to basically backstop the banks. We all did massive amounts of stimulus, China, U.S., Europe, and then we started, of course, printing the money. But the debt has increased, and if you look at just the U.S. alone, I think we had about $10 trillion in debt when Obama took over. Now we got about $18 trillion. In 5 short years. So is the next bubble the sovereign credit bubble? And what does that mean? Does that mean the U.S. is going to go bankrupt? I don't know. I'm not going to say that. But what it says to me is that there are going to be issues that come out to bear and play over the next several years that we really can't foresee, and it's going to cause a lot of volatility and angst in the stock market and other types of markets as well.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you. I originally said when the market bettered the 2000 high back in, I guess it was 2006, that, okay, you know, they resurrected this thing, and maybe the sector top occurred in 2007. But now, and this is all purely academic, but to me, looking at the data and seeing what I see, I agree with you 100%. I think that the economy and the stock market peaked in 2000. We've been in a secular bear market period ever since. And that what they've done is extend those relationships by messing with Mother Nature. And you're right. You know, those relationship studies tell me that had they left well enough alone, then we'd be coming out of this. We'd be 4 or 5 years out of this now on solid footing. And, you know, and instead, you know, we're still in the midst of it. So I think I agree with you. Now the question is, you know, what does it all mean, Ed, in your mind? I mean, is there any way that this can just continue and continue and continue, or does there have to be a washout in your mind? I mean, does it?
I think there has to be some sort of washout. I'm not going to be all gloom and doom, but what I do think is that you know, we, first of all, I think the meme I'm hearing out in the marketplace through all my, you know, former colleagues and friends in the business, a lot of people are saying to me, you know, this market's going to keep working, and I love when people say working. This market's going to keep working because they're going to keep printing money. So, you know, Tim, you and I talked about this, this myth that the Federal Reserve can control the market by printing money, I think is absurd. And I think, you know, the Fed would like for us to have the illusion that they can control markets, but the Fed doesn't control markets. They can alter the, you know, the course and maybe the duration of a market and, you know, stretch the rubber band a little bit. But ultimately, market forces will come down to bear on what is going on. And, you know, I think, you know, when I look at what's going on in the market, I'm starting to see speculative excesses and things that kind of typically happen at the end, the end of a bull run. And I got to tell you, I was around in 1999. I was a tech analyst before I became a portfolio manager, and I saw the craziness that was going on. It's not quite as bad as it was back then today, but I didn't think in my lifetime, especially my investing lifetime, I would see, you know, the sell side, you know, the Wall Street banks putting out recommendations on social media stocks and talk about, you know, multiples of revenues. I'm not talking multiples of earnings, revenues. I mean, because a lot of these companies don't have earnings. And, you know, they talk about them, and they say, well, it's only 15 times revenues, and because, you know, XYZ is 20 times revenue, so it's cheaper. I mean, when you think about that, Tim, I mean, that's just, you know, that's stuff I heard in '99, and I'm hearing it again, and you know, it makes with your work combined with my, you know, sense of the bullishness out there and the fact that people aren't looking at investments the way they're supposed to look at them, it just says to me that we're in the death throes of this current bull run, and I would be very leery here to have, you know, real capital invested right now in the stock market.
Right. I agree. And the thing is, you know, I have statistics that tell me that the longer something stretches, you know, a cycle, the longer cycle stretches, the worse the snapback. And you know, this thing is stretched. I mean, this may well end up being the longest 4-year cycle in stock market history. And I'm afraid that when it comes unwound, it's going to come unwound quickly. And then, like I said, I fear the not only the economic but the social consequences. And you know, just the fallout that could happen in areas and ways that most people, you know, cannot fathom at this point. You know, I mean,
well, you know, Tim, the problem is we don't know, you know, you don't know exactly what the feedback loops are. Once price starts to go down, you don't know where it ends and what it does and what kind of things it lays bare. The excesses don't get laid bare until, you know, you start having bankruptcies and people going belly up, and then it begins to cascade. You know, we saw that in the credit crisis, in the banking system. You know, right now, you know, there's, you know, as far as I can tell, there's a stock market bubble. You know, a lot of people will argue that it's not a stock market bubble, but, you know, I would say this has been an unusual market advance on fundamentals that just aren't that solid in my mind. And, again, whenever you see the market multiple expand, you should be leery. I'd be more comfortable if earnings were up, you know, 15% last year and the market was up 25%, that would make more sense to me than, you know, earnings up 5%, market up 30%, with no revenue growth. You know, and you look, margin debt is at 2.5% of GDP. It's right back to where it was in at the height of the 2000 bubble and the 2007 top. So everyone is borrowing money to own stocks. You have, you know, hedge funds that are levered to own stocks and juice returns. I don't know if there's a problem in the banking system. I am hearing about problems over in China. There could be a problem in China that's brewing. They have a shadow banking system like we had that is starting to actually give us trouble. There's talk of a default of one of the trusts, a wealth management product in China, which would, you know, could potentially cause a cascading of defaults. So there are excesses out there. It's just a question of once price starts to go lower, what kind of feedback loops we see. And you're right, we don't know what this all means and how it's going to affect, you know, if there will be any social unrest or whatnot. It depends on a lot of things. I'm hoping that we don't get any of that and this just, and, you know, this ends up being, you know, a stock market decline, but, you know, just have to wait and see and watch how it unfolds. You know, another thing, Tim, that, you know, a lot of people out there in the blogosphere and on CNBC talk about, you know, the dollar collapsing. And, you know, your work and what I think fundamentally kind of tie in nicely. I mean, you've been, you know, if you could talk a little bit about the dollar. I mean, you know, the dollar went straight down from 2000 into the low, basically, in 2008 or 9. I can't remember when the low was. And then it's been basing for the last 5 years. What's kind of your outlook on what your cycle work suggests about the dollar? Because then I'll come back to you on that, because that will tie in nicely to what's going on here.
Yeah. I want to talk about gold, and I want to talk about housing and some other things with you as well, some of the commodities. But you know, gold, let me start there. You know, in 2011, I started warning in the letter about the 9-year cycle top. And then as the evidence presented itself, you know, I presented the evidence. And then finally the evidence became overwhelming and the top became obvious. And I think that 9-year cycle top is in place in gold, and I see pressure on gold. I mean, I think that's not to say that it can't rally. Of course it can rally, but I think it's counter trend and that the longer term direction is down. And consequently, I see the opposite in the dollar. I think the longer-term bottom is in place. I think it's been basing now for 4 or 5 years. I think that basing period is kind of like what we saw back in the late 80s into the early mid-90s with the dollar. And I think the dollar is setting up to move much, much higher. And I know that's contrary to what 99% of the people out there are thinking. Everybody seems to be looking for a dollar collapse. And I don't see it now. Now let me say this. If something changes, and this is not doublespeak, because I go by the numbers, I go by the structure of the market, as you well know, and the statistics. So, you know, this whole basing period, we may get down the road 6 months or a year and see something very, very negative, in which case I'll change my tune on the dollar. But as of this interview, I'm actually pretty bullish on the dollar. I continue to think that it's been an embasing period for a number of years and that we're not going to see a dollar collapse at this point.
Yeah, so that brings up 2 points. So I'm bullish on the dollar as well. And fundamentally, if you think about why the dollar would rally, the dollar is the reserve currency of the world, okay? So that's why we're able to do what we do as a country and monetize our debt, all right? So if it wasn't for that, you know, we would have problems. So, you know, luckily we are the reserve currency of the world. And because of that distinction, lots of countries, especially emerging markets, have issued, especially when the dollar was in free fall from 2000 to 08, lots of emerging market debt was issued in U.S. dollars because, you know, you would issue the debt and then the dollar would depreciate and then you could pay it back in cheaper dollars. In a world, and think about this, when debt is created, you create debt. You issue debt, people need to sell dollars to buy the debt, okay? When you're deleveraging, which is what we've been doing, and really what the Fed has been trying to prevent is wholesale, you know, deleveraging, and that's why they've been printing the money. And that's why people are wrong on inflation, by the way. All their printing has done is just kind of put a finger in the dike known as deflation. And when debt is destroyed, retired or destroyed, there's then a increase in, you know, someone's need for dollars because you need to buy dollars to pay down the debt. So, you know, this ties into what could happen if the stock market starts going down. It would be a sign of deleveraging, and I would see the dollar going up in that kind of and the deleveraging would be global, by the way. It would be all over the world, and I think, you know, a sign of a bullish dollar would probably be bearish for other types of risk assets, and I think it would, you know, be a sign that the Fed is actually losing control of the situation.
Okay, and I think I totally agree with that. And now, here's another question. I don't know where it comes from. I liken it to urban legend, or I don't know, but there is a belief system that when the stock market goes down, that gold goes up. And, you know, we didn't see that in 2000. I mean, true, gold, the stock market peaked in, what, October of 07, and then gold moved up into that nine-year cycle top, and I think it was in 08, and then collapsed. But ultimately, they both went down together into the 09 lows. What do you see there with the gold bug people? And I'm not throwing stones, calling anybody a gold bug, but what do you see there? If we're right about the market and the dollar, what do you see there? Is the run in gold over?
Look, if the dollar is going to go straight up, and I'm not saying, I mean, it could base further, but I mean, if you're bullish on the dollar, I'm bullish on the dollar. If the dollar goes up like we think it will, you know, that, it doesn't, I don't think gold necessarily has to go down because the dollar goes up, but, you know, a lot of the gold bulls, the reason people own gold fundamentally is because they think the dollar is going to collapse and you want to own gold.
Exactly.
That would take away a lot of, you know, if the dollar started to rally, that would certainly make a lot of people who own gold concerned. Now, you know, I don't know if that would be a reason for gold going down, but it would certainly take away the bull thesis of why gold would be going up.
I agree. What about real estate? Do you see? Let me back up. When the rally out of the, or let me back up one step further than that. When the decline into the 08-09 low began, and I say 08-09 because some of the commodities bottomed in late 08. And then equities, I think, was the last to bottom in March of 9. And from that point, everything rallied in what I termed counter trend. I realized equities are at a new high. But nothing else has surpassed, you know, well, gold did. But in general, commodities have, you know, it's been counter trend bounces. And if you will, that's a bit of a non-confirmation, if you will, with equities. And now commodities in general and gold have rolled over. And I'm including, I guess, housing in this comment as well. But what do you see now? What do you make of these counter trend advances across the board, most asset classes that have not moved up in harmony with equities. Do you think that's telling us something, the fact that we see those non-confirmations, if you will?
I absolutely agree. I mean, look, you remember when the crisis unfolded and, you know, in and around the bottom, and they were trying to save the banking system and the massive amounts of monetary and fiscal stimulus, a lot of people basically said the Fed is reinflating and that they're going to cause commodity prices to go through the roof, the dollar's going to collapse, and you know, that's what was said in and around that time frame. So what's unfolded? The only thing that's gone to a new high is the stock market. Everything else has rolled over and is now, you know, I think commodities are in a bear market, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And real estate, you know, it's hard to get, you know, real-time data on that, but I don't think there's a lot of places in the U.S. where real estate has not gone to its old-time highs, never will. And, you know, that suggests to me that the Fed has not been as successful as people would like to think of in terms of reflating. Because if they were, and this theory of reflation were to hold, then, you know, all sorts of asset prices would be hitting new highs. The fact that they're not says to me that we are in the midst of a deflation,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to eventually work its way into the stock market, and that, you know, that remains to be seen. But, you know, the commodity situation really speaks to the weakness of China. I mean, China was the, you know, incremental buyer of commodities from 00 to 08, and, you know, they did a massive amount of stimulus. We had the counter-trend rally in commodities, and since then, commodities have rolled over. And, you know, what are we hearing out of China? We're hearing that, credit is tightening in China. There may be a default, like I said before, but in one of these wealth management products. You have the wealthy of China leaving in mass. There's an exodus out of China, and I guess the two cities that they're favoring are London and New York. Typically speaking, if things were going smashingly well in China, the wealthy wouldn't be leaving. And, you know, the other thing, I just read this the other day, there may be $4 trillion worth of Chinese assets parked in the Cayman Islands or, you know, in these offshore banks. So that doesn't bode well. And, of course, you know, some of our better short sellers have talked about China. I think Chanos has talked about China, and he has basically said that there's, you know, this round of stimulus that they did in 09 and 10, they basically built cities that are empty. You know, there's cities that literally are shiny and brand new with no people in them. And that's, you know, there's a term for that. It's called malinvestment. And, you know, that was built with credit, and it's not throwing off cash flow, and that credit is someone else's debt, and that will have to be serviced at some point or defaulted upon. So, you know, this is the setup we have, and commodities are telling the story in China. They're rolling over. The Chinese stock market is telling the story in China. China keeps putting out press releases about their wonderful GDP growth, and I've seen studies that suggest that the Chinese numbers are, in many regards, I don't want to use the term fraud, but they're just not right. they don't reflect reality. And commodity prices, I think, are telling you that.
All right. Well, Ed, I don't know. Anything else you want to cover before we go?
It just seems to me that 2014 is going to be a very interesting year. We have the stock market hitting new highs. We have all sorts of non-confirmation from commodities, from gold, from real estate. We have all these anecdotes I talked about with you today in this interview, kind of speculative excesses. You know, I'm seeing companies that really don't make any money having huge equity valuations, charts that are hyperbolic in nature, and you know, it just feels like we're close to some sort of topping process in the stock market, and I don't know where that takes us, but caution is warranted at this point. And, you know, I'm not telling people what to do with their money. I'm just saying that caution is warranted right here, right now. And, you know, it's, you know, and you know, lots of people I know are talking about the stock market. And, you know, 4 years ago, they wanted nothing to do with the stock market. So it's human nature, Tim. I mean, I guess at the bottom line here is what I like about your work and what I try to do when I marry it up with my fundamental analysis, I just try to take the human emotion out of it. And higher prices, you know, means that the risk is going higher. Not, and lower prices mean the risk is going lower. So, you know, in a nutshell, this sounds trite, but you know, Warren Buffett and lots of the great investors, they like to buy low and sell high, and buying low means going against the grain and buying when it feels awful, and selling high means selling when everything feels good. And right now, everything feels good, and the markets are up 30%. So I just think we need to be very cautious. We need to pay attention to what your work is suggesting, and just use some common sense and look around. I mean, things are just not as good as they should be for given this kind of rally. They just, you know, I just don't see it. You know, I don't feel it in the street. You know, the common man is not doing well. You know, we read every day about how the 1% are doing better and the rest of the country are not. So I don't know how you can build a, you know, new secular bull market on that kind of structure.
Ed, you can't. And I actually have an article coming out tomorrow that I'm going to put on some of the sites that post just, you know, generic little articles, high-level stuff. And it basically says that. And I've presented cases in my newsletter. I mean, there's no way you can have a shrinking economy like we've seen since 2000 and be in a secular bull market, period. And you know, I realize for the average person that is a hard concept to grasp when they're looking at higher stock prices. They want to be optimistic, but they're letting the emotion guide them. And the only thing I want to add here, and particularly for someone that may pick up this interview somewhere else that's not subscribing to my letter and they're not seeing the analysis, and this is not a sales pitch, but the thing is that, as you said in my work, is that it's emotionless. It's data. It's just data. And, you know, you follow the data and it tells you what it tells you. And, you know, it's told me that this whole thing is smoke and mirrors. No, I didn't think it was going to go as long as it has. But like I said, I know this sounds like a broken record. I've also said it's going to go until we get that statistical setup in place to cap it. And then the only thing that scares me, I know this, at minimum, we have a four-year cycle decline. But if this is counter trend, if you will, whatever label you want to put on it, advance within a secular bear market, if it's a cyclical bull market within a secular bear period, as I think it is, then the potential is just enormous in conjunction with the decline out of this four-year cycle top. And I think based on the statistical research, you know, we know what that top's going to look like, and that's what we're looking for. And that's pretty much all I have to say is I just trying to reach people, have them listen. You know, I use these methods to identify the top in 2007. I use these same methods to identify the top in 2000. I use these methods to identify the top in commodities in 2008 and the housing top, I might add. And that's all in print. And, you know, the funny thing is that then, like now, people didn't want to believe it. And so, you know, I guess my message is stop and think for yourself and don't let them tell you what's going on or what to think when you flip on CNBC or whatever, listen to some politician or you know, PhD type trying to tell us that, that all is well. I guess, and my point with that is, I put this little line in my newsletter, either A, and this is a little bit of an arrogant statement, but it is what it is. I don't mean for it to sound that way. But if somebody tells me something that's not so, and that's how I would see that, then either they're ignorant on the subject or they're deceitful. I don't know how else to say it. Ed, that said, I appreciate you being here. Maybe we can do it again.
No, I appreciate your time. And again, you know, what's in, before I go, one last thing. You know, you said it. You want to take the emotion out of it, and you want to understand the cycles, and there's an ebb and flow to the markets, and these things happen with regularity often. History does tend to, it doesn't exactly repeat itself, but it often looks the same. And the one thing I will say is that, you know, when the market does top out here and starts to go down, there's never any bad news associated with the market going down. Price will go down, and we'll be well into this correction before any bad news really starts to show up.
They won't realize it. People won't realize what is taking place until it's too late.
I mean, in 2000, we had the peak in the tech stocks in March of 2000, and you know the wheels didn't start to fall off the bus economically until 6 to 12 months later.
Right.
And the same thing in 2007, the market peaked in October of 2007, and things really didn't start to get bad until end of the first, beginning of second quarter of 2008. And I suspect the same thing will happen this time. You know, price will lead bad news.
Right. I agree. All right, Ed, I really appreciate your time, more than you know, and like I said, maybe we can do it again in a few months.
All right, you got it. Take care.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye.